the guns don't make people suicidal, but in the midst of crisis, if someone reaches for a gun, they are far more likely to die. We also know in the western part of the United States, there are more rural areas that have less access to resources. And then also some rural areas may have higher rates of either unemployment, financial stresses, substance abuse, things, all of these other kinds of situations that can also increase suicide risk.
In recent years, there have been a lot of news reports about depression and suicide rates among teens. And I'm wondering, is mental health really getting worse among the younger generation? And is it possible also that we're just more aware of it?
Yeah. So we do know that over the past decade, suicide rates for youth in the United States increased 60%. In 2021, 30% of high school girls said that they seriously considered suicide. Almost half of students who identified as LGBTQ, and over 25% of those who identify as American Indian or Alaska Native. So we certainly know there are higher rates of suicidal thoughts in certain populations. Certainly, there's a lot of concern around things like social media, social skills among youth, and so forth. I think we're also very concerned, though, about firearms as a contributor to teen suicide. Nearly half of youth suicides are by firearm, most often a parent's gun. So it's important for us to continue talking about how to reduce access for youth. So, for example, locking up firearms that are in the home.
In Colorado, if you look at the statistics, most people who commit suicide are not kids. They're men ages 25 through 55 years old-ish. These are gun owners. These are people who don't have a parent to take away the gun or to lock the gun away from them. I mean, how do we make sense of a conversation about safe gun ownership?
What we do is a harm reduction approach, which means recognizing many people choose to own guns and that having a gun can put someone at increased risk of suicide. So how do we work with those people to help them recognize that risk and then take the steps that they need to? This is it's a high-risk group for many reasons, but it's exactly the group that we need to be working with to find solutions so that we can prevent these deaths.
People who end up committing suicide, statistically in Colorado, most of them have not had any mental health treatment. And the state in recent years has been under a lot of scrutiny for what some people call the broken mental health safety net. What resources are there available for people who need help but don't really know where to turn to get support?
First, I would disagree with your first premise that there's no help available. Is our system perfect? No. But help is available every day through 988, through walk-in crisis centers, through emergency departments. We need to be encouraging people to reach out, not scaring them that there's not services available. Do we need expansion of services? Absolutely, right? I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But there's a lot of stigma still around help-seeking behaviors, and we need to normalize for people that it is okay to call for help. It's okay to talk to friends and family. It's okay to talk to clergy if that's where you feel comfortable. Or it's okay to call the 988 hotline or the Colorado Crisis Line to find out what's available. You know, some people may have depression or other mental illness that would benefit from medical treatment, so medications or therapy. A lot of times, though, people just need connection to resources to figure out what to do about a job situation or something else that might be going on. We know a lot of people who die by suicide don't have a diagnosed mental health problem, in part because they probably haven't sought help. They haven't felt comfortable saying, hey, I'm going through these troubles. So we really need to be working to destigmatize that kind of help-seeking behavior. We all have mental health the same way we have physical health, and we all have mental illness at times the same way we have physical illness. It's a roller coaster, and that's a normal part of human existence.
How should people think about asking for help and when it's time to ask for help? How do you identify that? And then what should you do?
So if you're feeling more down than usual, if you're feeling more anxious than usual, especially if it's starting to get in the way of your daily activities, you can't sleep, you can't function at work, those kinds of things are warning signs that it's time to get help. It's also okay to call any of these hotlines if you're worried about somebody else and you don't know what to do. If it's a friend or family member and you're like, I don't really know, are they at risk or not? For sure. I think big red flags when you should take action are really thinking about death, planning for death, somebody making comments about planning suicide or not wanting to be around anymore. That's when it's really time to get some help.
Dr. Emmy Betts is a professor of emergency medicine and a practicing emergency physician at the University of Colorado and the Anschutz Medical Campus outside of Denver. Dr. Betts, thank you so much for talking with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your coverage. I appreciate your interest.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.